Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Bonna Pfeiffer.
You're listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast for the fine art needle. No, let's see. The needle artist.
Yep.
How's that? Needle artist.
Yeah, that's what we are.
I think. And our guest this week, this is the third time, and it seemed like it was just like 4 or 5 months ago, but it's been more than a year, which is shocking to me. So Nicola Parkman. Hi, Nicola.
Hello, Gary. Hello, Vona.
For those who don't know, Nicola Parkman, Hands Across the Sea samplers. A whole truckload of reproduction samplers. And Sarah Brazier is one of them. I'm going to finish by September 1. I'm going to be done.
Yep. You always make me laugh how you pronounce her surname.
Oh?
Because it sounds like a lady's undergarment.
No, I try to say Brazier.
Yeah.
Because the first time when we talked and I said Brazier, and you immediately corrected me. Okay, so say it the British way.
Okay. It's Sarah Brazier.
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 Brazier. Oh, my.
Sarah Brazier. Okay. See, this is good. This is good. Brazier. Okay. We got it. Okay. From now on, it's not Brazier or Brazier. It's Brazier. Okay. Because we got to be careful of that. And then I learned from Nicola that Fanny is very offensive in England.
Oh, Gary, you shouldn't have said that word. Making me blush.
Yeah, Vonna, did you know that? Like, fanny pack? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what my grandmother's, her name was Frances, and my grandpa called her Fanny.
Well, in England, that would have been offensive. Mm-hmm. And still is.
We call them bum bags.
Bum bags?
Oh, Gary, bum bags.
Okay. I love the cultural differences. I love it. Yep. Before we go any further, this show is sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery. And here's a word from Kim.
This edition of Fiber Talk is proudly sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery. Sassy Jack's is a vibrant young needle workshop located on the picturesque Main Street of Weaverville, North Carolina. Sassy Jack's shares a beautifully renovated historic building with Five Little Monkeys Quilt Shop and a wonderfully renovated classroom facility on the upper level of our building. Our classroom facility is best in class, and we hope you'll find a retreat or workshop that you just can't miss sometime later this year or next. We still have a few openings in our August class with Beth Seal of Summerhouse Stitchworks, as well as our September Soiree Stitch Retreat and our Halloween Retreat with Isabel from The Primitive Hair. Spaces are filling fast, so please give us a call to register or check out the info on our website under Designer Classes at SassyJackStitchery.com. We are also happy to announce that registration for our Jack's Hats 2020 workshops featuring Nicola Parkman of Hands Across the Sea Samplers will open for registration on July 7th. Please watch your inbox for a special newsletter the evening of July 6th, or look for the registration documents on our website under Designer Classes on July 7th. We hope you find a way to come visit us soon. If you can't make it to us, then visit us on Facebook or Instagram. We love it when you stop by and say hi, whether it's in person or online. We truly appreciate you. And we really appreciate all the good things we hear and learn from Fiber Talk. We are super proud to be a sponsor of this wonderful resource of stitching goodness. Thank you, Fiber Talk, for giving us some stabby pokey talk twice a week. Kim and team at Sassy Jack Stitchery.
Hey, thanks, Kim, and Sassy Jack Stitchery and all the fine people there. And, thanks for sponsoring these Fiber Talk podcasts and making them possible. And please remember all of the discounts we have going on now with Sassy Jack's, where we have the Sampler Sunday samplers kits at 15% off. And if you are going to or thinking about doing the Queen's Sampler with Vonna and me, that kit is available with some discounting in it. So remember that. And then also, by the time this goes up, it may be sold out, but Kim says there's plenty of spaces for Nicola's workshop next spring. And so Kim says email to get on the list, and if it's filled, I'm sure there'll be a waiting list, but very active. Vonna and I are there Thursday and Friday and Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
That's my subtle way of saying I sure hope those get filled up because, as Vonna said, who wouldn't want to be with us, you know?
That's right.
Well, I think Kim's actually put on an additional session because of the numbers that had applied. So there's a fourth session for the two-day workshop, and the third session for the one-day workshop has been put on, because what we don't want is to have very large classes. We wanted to have reasonable size classes so that, you know, everybody has good time with me.
Right. Boy, I'm going to work you like a dog, Nicola. Holy smokes.
I enjoy it. It is so rewarding teaching. You know, I came back from having done 10 days of teaching with only one day break in between. That was a travel day from North Carolina to Arizona. But my feet were tired, but I wasn't tired. Seeing people's faces when they were achieving, it's just so rewarding. You know, I came home buzzing.
Well, I will say, your energy does not flag as the day goes on. You keep going. I'm impressed with that. So,
yeah,
good classes. Well, and Kim is making every effort to have as many spaces as possible next May. So email her at Sassy Jacks and get your name in if you want to, if you're interested, and you should be, because we're doing the sampler that we saw when I was there, right? The little one we took out of the frame.
Yeah, the one that was really sort of discovered in that first session. That's going to be our technical project for the first day. And it just had to be, you know, because there was so much excitement when everything came to light about this sampler. So, and, you know, we did a video about it, didn't we?
So much excitement. You should have seen Nicola. She came the closest a human has ever come to flying on its own. Yeah, that was excitement.
It was, yes. It was a thrilling moment. But samplers are like that. You never know what a sampler is going to bring with it.
Right.
I've recently, in fact, it's the booklet I'm writing this week. It was a sampler from Wales with a very common name. There must be literally thousands of girls with this name in Wales. And I just didn't think that I would have a chance of finding this girl. And I wanted to have a look at the back colours of the sampler. So I took the back off the frame, and there tucked behind was information about the girl.
Oh, no, really?
And I went from a sampler that had no date on it, just a very, very common name, to having a wealth of information about this girl. Oh, and it's such a buzz. You know, it really, really is.
Oh, that's like the extra gold in the treasure hunt. Wow.
Absolutely. It's the icing on the cake.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. So now you can take that thing and really develop the history and put a whole thing together without having to guess.
Yeah. Well, I normally like to write around about 4 pages. Mm-hmm. I'm on the 6th page of this girl.
I have information. I'm using it.
Yeah, well, yes, you know, her story's there. And I know that so many needleworkers will enjoy her story. And you know, it makes the sampler all the more meaningful. And do you know, it's unbelievable. These last couple of weeks, about the last sort of month, I suppose, 6 weeks, I've had this wonderful run of great finds. My main project at the moment, Emma, when I started to research her, I actually
Nicola, I'm going to stop you right there because we're going to get going and we are not going to get mention of your newest sampler in. And I know how this is going to go. So hold on to that thought, because now the newest one from Hands Across the Sea Sampler is Mary Lee 1793.
That's right. Yes.
So that's the new one. So tell a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, Mary Lee was reproduced in 2016 and it was reproduced specifically for the Attic Needleworks 2017 Stitch Along. And there was a very, very small print run for this sampler, and it very quickly sold out. But as it was specifically for the Stitch Along, we didn't reprint it. And, you know, the Stitch Along started over 2.5 years ago. It finished over 1.5 years. So I feel that now it was time to make it available for everybody. So last week she was released, and she's in a new format, and she's a beautiful sampler. And, you know, people are very, very excited about her. And I've been packing as fast as I can to get orders out. Yeah. But she's an impressive sampler, very, very nice sampler.
Yeah, and that has quite a bit of text in the middle there, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It's beautiful. I mean, it really is beautiful.
She?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would encourage people to go watch your video that you did. You showed it a couple of times with your Needlework Natters video and then the one
That's
with
right.
Pam. And when
right.
you see it on those videos, it's just like, because I really wasn't interested at all until I saw it on the video. And I told Gary, I go, she's sitting in my basket at Sassy Jack's, and I'm just waiting to, like, push the button after I talk myself into her again, because I have so much going. But she is beautiful. She absolutely is gorgeous.
Yeah, the colors just pop on her. But those blues are just so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's really special. And she's a big sampler, Bona.
I know she is. She's not a Bona size sampler.
No, she's not Bona size, but, you know, we may convert you. The turquoises and the raspberries and the golden olives and the bluey greens, they're beautiful on that sampler. They really, really are.
Well, that's a nice one. So that's available. So that's actually been available for now when this gets aired for like a week or so. So people
that's
can
right,
get that.
That's right, yes. Yeah. And the model is at Sassy Jack's. So if you visit the store, you know, ask him if you can have a look at her. And I promise you, you will drool.
Okay. All right. And then the other thing, Hannah Coates. You've redone that one?
Yes. Yes. Now, Hannah Coates was the third sampler that Hands Across the Sea samplers released, going back to the early part of 2017. And I've had a huge problem with storage, and I had to retire some samplers just to have room to have new samplers come through. Hannah, you know, I ran out of her, so she was one. And that was natural to retire. But I've had a big sort out of storage, and I've managed to be inventive and create a little bit more floor space. So I thought, what sampler can I bring back? And it just had to be Hannah. I have so many emails. You know, every week I have an email about Hannah. So I know that Stitchers are going to be very excited. And in fact, at the time of recording this, I hadn't really properly announced that she was back in stock. But I woke up this morning and she'd sold out. Must have seen she was on my website. So
oh, no.
I very quickly this morning had to order another print run. But it was really funny. When I sat down to look at Hannah and looked at the chart that we had produced in 2017, it made me realise how much I'd grown, not as a reproductionist, but as, you know, with publishing and finding the vision of how I wanted to present Hands Across the Sea samplers to Stitchers. So I sat down and I rewrote her booklet, not the graph, because the graph is as the sampler is. But I sat down, rewrote the booklet, played around with the artwork, and she's now in, she's 9-inch squares to the inch. She has a centerfold spread. She has a bookmark, and she now has 4 pages to her story. And I'm sort of proud to present her to Needleworkers, because she now fits the image that Hands Across the Sea samplers has with their productions.
Yeah. You know, I think that's so interesting, the evolution that happens, because whenever we try something with a magazine, a new section or a new series of articles or something, you know, we sit down and we'll plan it out and we'll say, all right, this is what we think it is. But then it's always, we know what will evolve, that there will be an evolution. There'll be some maturity. And so clearly then with Hands Across the Sea Samplers, with all that you've done, there's been an evolution for you too, as you've gotten more and more experience with them.
Gary, I had never sat down and written a booklet before. I knew nothing about publishing. I was just a complete novice, and it was an extremely steep learning curve. And although Barbara Hudson, Queen Town Samplers, and Jean Lee, the Attic Needleworks, were very kind, helping me understand the needlework market and questions about linens and silks, I didn't actually have anybody I could turn to about publishing a booklet, as opposed to maybe printing off pages from a home computer. And it was just a huge learning curve for me, and you know, having to learn about programs, and learning about software programs when you're in your 50s, that's quite hard work. I'm sure if I was a teenager, I would have picked it up much quicker. But, you know, desktop publishing, using the Adobe Cloud. I'm sure they're all very familiar to you, Gary, because of your magazine background.
Right, right.
But, you know, for somebody who had no knowledge of it, it was a baptism of fire.
Well, they're intimidating programs. All of them are. And it's the kind of thing where any of us who use them regularly probably only use 20 or 30% of what they're capable of doing. You learn what you need to get the job done. And yeah, exactly. No, that's a steep learning curve is being modest. Yeah, that's a mountain to climb with some of those.
Even to my naivety, not even realizing that when you're publishing a booklet, you have to have groups of four.
Oh, yes.
You have to have four. You know, it's those little silly little things that when you stop and think about it, gosh, yeah. Yes, you know, that was obvious. But if you haven't had any experience of it, you know, you don't realize. And of course, the artwork, learning how to play with pictures and modify them and combine images into, a layout. It's quite something else, actually.
graphics. Well, words are easy. The graphics are always the tough part, getting them right, getting them the right size, getting them to fit, look right. Yeah, that's always the tough part. Yeah.
But I love that sort of time with the sampler, because the sampler starts off with me, spending a lot of time being very intimate with the sampler as I'm reproducing it, you know, studying it under high magnification, looking at the back of the sampler. Then if I'm not stitching it, it will go to a model stitcher, and you sort of lose the sampler, and then when it's finished, it comes back to you, so it becomes your baby again. And then, you know, you start to research and you write a story and you create this image of the girl in your mind. And to me, the hours I spend on these booklets are tremendous, but I don't mind a single minute, because this is my tribute to the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
It's her moment, her written moment in history. And when I get to the end of having the book ready for the press to roll, it almost feels like giving birth. Mm. And you want to hold on, because you want to treasure that moment, that intimate relationship you have with this reproduction. And then, you know, when you do let go, it's a funny sort of period, you know, you feel a little bit lost until you find the next girl, and then she totally occupies all your thoughts.
Wow. When I send a magazine to the printers, like, get this out of here. I got things to do.
Oh no, it's sort of, you know, you sort of, maybe Verna understands as a mother, you want to hold on to your baby as long as possible.
Yeah. No, I mean, I see. Yeah, it's a different thing. I mean, I say that about magazines, but, you know, that's just cranking them out. But for you and what you have to go through from purchasing the original all the way through till you see a book show up in a box on your doorstep, you know, that's a journey for every single one of them. And like you say, you have to you research and you write the story. And that's a whole different thing from what I do. I'm quite sure you get very attached to them, every one of them.
This week, I've been in North Wales in the period 1832 to 1911, and I've been researching master mariners and how they got their qualification and what life was like for them and their families, and boat building on a little beach in North Wales. And I know that sounds a little bit, well, what's that got to do with the sampler? But this young girl, her father was a master mariner. She married a master mariner. And when you research them, you get to understand what their lives were probably like. This young girl may have gone with her father and her mother and sailed the high seas to far-flung places. And before she had children, she most probably definitely would have gone with her husband on an ocean-going trip as he was captaining, you know, this trading vessel. It just brings these people to life.
To me, that's the fun part. I mean, I love stitching these things, but the culture that you get to learn from whatever time period and just the things that they did day to day is always so fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting. And I have a love of history and I have a love of embroidery, and samplers combine the two.
Right. Right. So talk about, I'm curious now that you've done a lot of them. And lately in the last couple of years, you crank out a lot of samplers. Talk about this, the process. Give us a little look at the process of acquiring these originals. And I mean, you buy auctions and other things, but how do you make sure you get good ones? What is it that flips your switch and says, I got to have this one? How does that all work in your head?
Okay. Well, most of my samplers I buy in the UK at auction. I don't mean eBay. I mean through reputable auction houses, you know, that belong to the Association of Auctioneers. You know, you can still buy a dud one. You know, I've picked up a sampler before now that, you know, it was a modern day reproduction, very cleverly done, you know, but it wasn't an original. And a very dear friend of mine in the last few weeks in the States has bought a sampler that when it came was a modern sampler. It was not a sampler of the period in which it was being described as.
So even for people with your experience, then one will slip through every time, every now and then.
Well, if you see a sampler in person, that's different. But if you're buying through photographs, sometimes it's very, very hard, you know, to tell, especially if the sampler is underneath glass. Mm-hmm. You know, glass can distort a lot. And, you know, we have a lot of these samplers that are actually prints of antique samplers that are so realistic that when you see them under glass, it's very difficult to tell. And it's only sometimes when you take them out of the glass that you can tell they're a print and not an actual sampler. So, you know, it's always buyer beware. It's much better to be able to see a sampler in person. But, you know, where I live, that is very difficult because I live, you know, in a remote part of the country. Funny enough, I picked up a beautiful band sampler a couple of months ago, which you saw at Sassy Jack's. It was one of the band samplers, Gary. Mm-hmm. And that had come up for sale, 20 minute drive from me. And that was really lovely to be able to go to an auction house and study the sampler in the flesh and, you know exactly what it was worth, what I was buying. Funny enough, this sampler is called Elizabeth Pito, and Jean and I have agreed this week this is going to be one of the samplers I teach at the Attic Needleworks in August of next year. So that's going to be exciting.
And so you must have, like, favorite auction houses so that you have an experience? Do you lock in on two or three so that you know most of the time what you're getting, or are you constantly searching no matter where it is?
Well, there's a website called The Sale Room, and there's also another one called Invaluable, and Invaluable is actually in the UK and it's in the US. So a lot of your American listeners will be familiar with Invaluable.com. And you can go to these sites and they collate all the auctions, so you can see them all in one place, so that you don't have to be, you know, trawling through auctioneers' websites, and you can bid through these sites. So, you know, that's a good way. And if you're dealing with a reputable registered auction house, and if you buy something that is misdescribed, then you've got a reasonable chance of, you know, getting your money back. But when you buy at auction, it is buyer beware. And, you know, you have to be very careful that you haven't misread the description. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, if an auctioneer was saying a sampler stitched in 1820 and it was a sampler stitched in 1980, that's a misdescription.
Mm-hmm.
so you
have to be very, very careful. And, you know, we've talked about this before in a previous Fibre Talk show, you know, the whole process of buying through auction. You have to remember that the actual price that you're bidding, there is a premium to go on top of that, and, you know, that could be anything up to the high 20%. You know, you could say spend £1,000, or, you know, put a bid of £1,000 in, and there's a 27% premium to be added. You know, that's another £270, I believe. Mm-hmm. 27% of £1,000, and then you may have tax to go on top of that. And then the other thing is, if you're buying long distance, so you can't go to the auction house to collect the sampler, you know, you have to pay a specialist company to go and collect it, pack it and ship it. So there are lots of hidden expenses. And if you're going to buy at auction, you need to read the small print and, you know, ascertain all the extras that go on to the hammer price.
Yeah, well, that's the one of the things I learned from you. Because and samplers have become extremely popular, and I've heard more than one person buying a sampler because they wanted to own an original. And that always sticks in my head, is all of those additional costs that go beyond the apparent sale price that really, it's really deceptive. You know, I bought this for £1,000. Yeah, but it'd probably cost you $1,500 or $1,700 time it actually shows up at your doorstep.
You know, you have to, you know, when you're bidding, you actually have to, though you say bidding 900, 950, 1,000, 110, you know, the bidding goes very quick. You have mentally got to have in your mind what that actually translates to. And if you're bidding for the first time, it's a good idea to write out, you know, like 100, 150, 200, 250, 300. And that's how the auctioneer speaks. But have a column showing what the total cost is. So as you're bidding, you might be bidding, say, £300, but you know it's actually going to be costing you maybe £370, mm-hmm. you know, and that will help you. I now tend to be able to do it automatically in my head. And I've got to be honest, it's very rare that I actually bid live. I tend to put a bid in beforehand and, you know, let the computer bid for me at the live auction. And that way you can't be tempted to increase what you set as your maximum price. But, you know, I will let you into a secret. Sometimes if I really, really, really want a sampler, I will bid live then. Uh-huh. And then I might pay a bit too much for it. But I'm normally very, very good. But Harriet Salt, the Bristol orphanage sampler that I published, when did I publish that? It was sort of like May, wasn't it? You know, I saw that. I fell in love with her. And I was there bidding live on that one.
Now, Vonna, do you have that one?
Yes, I do.
I know you do.
She's beautiful, isn't she?
She is what, I'm going to be honest with you, I had never heard of Bristol samplers ever. And I was watching one. I was watching when you brought her out, when you, you know, released her. I watched that video. And as soon as that you pulled it up on the screen, I was like, oh, look at that. And as soon as it was released, I think I pre-ordered the whole kit.
Yeah.
And then I started really researching George Mueller and the Bristol orphanages, and mm-hmm. I've listened to some books online on Audible, and I've watched, there's several documentaries about George Mueller on YouTube. Yeah. And then I've watched the Louisa Cooleymore video of yours probably about six times, and I just have and luckily a lady had Louisa's chart, and she sent it to me after our sampler Sunday. And so I must say that I have just fallen in love with them, and I just look every day I look at them. But I will say this, we're going back to what was said earlier in the show, how you tell a story, it just almost like brings me to tears every time I listen to one of your stories about one of your girls. And I can understand exactly what you say about getting the sampler ready for market, how you feel like that is a part of you, that you're, you know, almost like her debut, that you're sending her out to the grand ball for everybody to admire. And I tell you what, that is a gift that you have of telling a story and crafting the story, because it touches me every time. So,
but they mean such a lot to me. Mm-hmm. They're my babies, and you know, their stories, a backstory is enough to make me buy a sampler. It doesn't have to be visually appealing necessarily. You know, the story sometimes. So I've bought samplers that really, you know, I was stupid buying, but I bought them because I wanted to save them. And, you know, I have a box of samplers that I will never reproduce, but those girls just, you know, they needed somebody to love them.
Well, I think this whole sampler movement, and I think it's really gaining some serious steam, but it seems to be such growing interest in it. And to me, the thing that is so valuable about it is that it's the history, it's the preserving the past. And we just throw that away so often. We just throw the history away and keeping these things alive.
You see, it's female social history as well. It's the history of children that maybe never grew up to make their mark on the world. Their mm-hmm. only mark on the world was their schoolgirl sampler, because that is all that survives.
Right.
You know, even maybe a young child from a working class family may have had a pauper's burial, probably never had a headstone. Their sampler, if it survived, is the only thing that's left of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But see, for me, maybe it was you and I, Ivana, but I don't remember who, we were talking about how, you know, today's young people, they don't want the old stuff. That, you know, the old furniture and the tea sets and those things that have been handed down through the family over the years. And so much of that stuff is just going away and mm-hmm. just getting thrown away as parents die and, you know, the estate gets distributed and mm-hmm. those things just get thrown away. And it just saddens me, because it's not just those things, but old buildings that we just tear down, and I just cringe every time an old historic building gets torn down for some steel and glass structure, because that's our past, that's our history, and it anymore it just gets thrown away too fast. And keeping these samplers going and people stitching them and learning the history and experiencing the past like that, I just think is so valuable beyond the stitching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, your children are more likely to keep a sampler that has your name on it than a little girl that they don't know anything about.
Yes.
And you know, even on a reproduction sampler, you should be putting your name, it's your needlework, you should be proud of it, and you know, make it your own, and then your family will appreciate it. You know, maybe a grandmother who has a, you know, spends time looking after grandchildren. The grandchildren may remember their nana, their grandmother, stitching that sampler. And when grandma dies, they might think, I'll keep that because that reminds me of my grandmother. You know, children absorb things that it might not be in the forefront of their mind, but they pop back into their mind. You know, and like with a granddaughter, you might sit and entertain them one afternoon with some needle and thread and talk about it. When they're in their 30s and maybe they're on maternity leave and they've got a little bit of time on their hands before their baby's born, they might decide to stitch a birth sampler. Or when they're older, they might think, that's what my grandmother used to do. I'm going to have a go at doing that. You just don't know.
Yeah, you just don't know.
How do you keep yourself, when it comes to buying samplers, how do you keep yourself from getting caught up in the thrill of the hunt? How do you keep that from, I mean, I got to believe with as many samplers as are available these days or apparently available that, you know, your heart must get racing and I just want to get that one and that one and that one.
Well, putting Harriet Salt aside where, you know, I did have a mad moment, I always say to myself, there'll be another one. If it's meant to be for you, it'll be for you. You know, I think samplers have a way of finding you if they want you. but, you know, you always have to say there'll always be another one. And there will be. You know, there are thousands of samplers out there. And, you know, there's samplers coming up every week for sale. And if you think how many samplers have survived hundreds of years, it goes to show literally the hundreds of thousands of them that were stitched in the first place. Like, you know, every child stitched at least one sampler. And over the centuries, that adds up to a lot of samplers.
Yeah, it amazes me how many the supply seems to be. I'm sure it's endless, but it sure seems to be a pretty healthy supply because the number of reproduction people just do not seem to lack for samplers to work on. And it's, I mean,
you should come and look in my study at the moment. It's embarrassing.
I talked to Ray. He told me all about it. Yeah.
He's very, very understanding. Bless him. Yeah, he
I
really
think it,
is.
I think it was Gary. If you could see this, you would run. I think that's what he said. Yeah.
He knows what it means to me, and he knows the gap it fills in my life. And he knows it keeps me happy and sane. And he knows if I'm wrapped up in a sampler, he can go and play as much golf as he wants.
Well, I have to say, he's a great guy, but he's also clearly very supportive. You know, just seeing him at Nashville,
He knows what it means to me, and he does support me.
Well, and without that, you couldn't do what you do. I mean, you got to have that kind of support.
No, he supports me financially acquiring the samplers because, you know, reproducing samplers is a labor of love. Nobody is going to make, you're not going to support yourself off reproducing samplers. And also, I spend probably every day, a couple of hours at least every day with needlework in some form or other. You know, sometimes I could still be working at 1-2 o'clock in the morning. I really do enjoy it. And, you know, he understands.
Yeah.
So, do you know what? I'm looking at a sampler as I'm sat here on my desk.
Uh-oh.
That was stitched in 1646. That was 3 years before Charles II was beheaded by Oliver Cromwell. That's such a long time ago. And that sampler has survived all that time. Isn't it amazing?
Well, yeah,
it is.
That's the thing, that the one that we saw at Sassy Jack's.
Yeah.
Almost 400 years old. I still can't get over a piece of cloth and thread surviving in that good of condition for that long. And, that one really has stuck with me, seeing that firsthand, seeing that come off of the board, out of the frame and off the board, and then really understanding how old that is and what a piece of history that is.
Like, I always try and bring some little surprise treats to any workshop, but, you know, I never expected that at the workshop. It was just so thrilling. And Vona, it's your size.
I know.
155 by 180.
All three of the samplers that you're going to do next year at Sassy Jack's is Vonna sized, I believe.
Yes, I know. Do you know what? That was, I think, I'm sure it was, Gary, when we discovered this sampler, I think one of the things we actually said that night was it's bonus.
Yes, yes, we did. You were utmost in our thoughts, yes. What is it that draws you? I mean, you're probably known for giant samplers. What is it that draws you to those? Or is that not something you even think about?
I think that a huge number of English schoolgirl samplers are quite substantial samplers to start with. But I also like small samplers. And this year, because I'm literally every month this year, bar April, I am traveling. So this year I wanted to have lots of travel size projects. So I have been stitching some smaller ones, but that doesn't mean to say there aren't big ones going on in the background. We've actually got 16 models in production at the moment.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Like, you know, they may not all come to, you know, fruition this, well, they're not all going to come to fruition this year. You know, things happen in life, but we've got some really, really beautiful samplers in production. And what I'm trying to do is to bring different elements to our portfolio all the time. And yeah, it's great fun. And, you know, it's exciting. You know, and it's one of the hard things is to keep a secret, like Gary, you know, because when the people came to my workshops in the States, I brought some very special samplers for them to get some sneak peeks. We have got the most amazing sampler coming out at the end of August. You know, it's just so exciting, but we've been keeping this sort of like a secret for quite some time. And, you know, we really, really want to tell people, we really, really want to show people, but, you know, it's nice to have the launch of a sampler, the ta-da moment.
Right, right. Well, see, and that's what I've enjoyed just here in the past year, maybe year and a half, is the variety that you've been introducing with Bathia and MH. I mean, those are pretty high level complex samplers. And now we know why we've seen some small ones, because it's just convenience for you. So I thought there was some big, deep thinking trend or plan there, but it was just, it fits in my purse. That's what it was.
There is something actually.
No, it fits in my purse, Nicola. I'm going with that.
No, it does. It does fit in my handbag. When you said purse, I thought, gosh, that must be a very small sample to stitch in a purse, because purse is where we keep our money in the UK. But I'm with you. You mean the handbag. I have big handbags. But no, Hands Across the Sea samplers, we're on a journey. And we want to take as many stitches with us on a journey. And the one thing that I've realized, in particular this year, I have a lot of emails from stitchers saying, is this sampler suitable to stitch on Ada? And, you know, to stitch on Ada, you can't have over one, because it's very difficult. You can stitch over one on Ada, but it's very difficult. So you're looking for a sampler that is all over two and cross stitch. And I wanted to add some samplers to my portfolio that if somebody did stitch on Ada, they could join this journey with us. And I think that's one of the reasons why I was looking at sort of maybe some samplers that were all over two, and they just tended to be slightly smaller. And you know, I'm hoping that people will have a go, stitch a sampler. I think if you stitch one reproduction sampler, you will be hooked. They, you know, they are addictive. And I want to take as many people who can journey with us, because it's exciting times. We have, if you could see the band samplers that we have in production, they are some fabulous, fabulous samplers. We've got beautiful schoolgirl samplers with wonderful sweeping borders and magnificent centerpieces. We've got some Welsh samplers coming out that are full of rich colours and village scenes. You know, it is a very exciting journey at the moment. The Attic Needleworks, the second project for next year, it's the most gorgeous schoolgirl sampler, beautiful border, four different types of flowers repeating through, an inner satin stitch border, a beautiful house, fabulous huge roses in the center next to the house. And we know the house because on the back of the sampler, somebody took the trouble to include a photograph of the house and some background information. And immediately that sampler becomes so much more interesting. We actually know the very house and it's still in existence today.
Wow.
So, you know, that's really exciting. My mind boggles with all the samplers that are currently in production. You know, Sandra, who also reproduces the Hands Across the Sea samplers, she's got three amazing samplers in production. You may have noticed we posted some sneak peeks of a sampler that we call the Nellies because it has elephants on there. That's almost finished, and that is absolutely fabulous. It's different. There's not many samplers you see with elephants on them, and these elephants have got howdahs on them as well, so that's different. You know, it's, you never know what's going to come up next. And it's exciting.
How have you evolved as a reproduction person? You faster, more accurate, get fooled less? How has that process been over the years?
Well, I think that with accuracy, when you are sitting down at a computer and you're going to click your mouse maybe 70 odd thousand times, there are going to be errors. You know, we try and cut down on the errors where we can, and we rely heavily on our model stitches to proof. But, you know, when your hand gets tired and it's been working a couple of hours on a mouse, sometimes you think you've clicked the mouse and released it and you haven't, and you've moved your mouse and you've dragged something. These little things, they happen. You know, somebody who writes, as a magazine writer, Gary, you know that it's inevitable. There's typos in an article, you know, it's one of those things. We try our very, very hardest for our reproductions to be error-free. We certainly wouldn't let a production go to print that we knew there was an error. You know, we would always try and correct things. And if an error comes to light, we do on our website. If anybody's stitching one of our samplers, go to our website. On the web page, you will find a description of the sampler. You'll find a complete thread legend. You'll find a complete stitch guide. And you will also find a corrections tab. And if there's anything we know of, we would have posted a correction there. How do you grow as a reproductionist? Like for me, Lucy Navier, the Queen of the May this year, that sampler took me a long time to reproduce. It was a sampler that required an awful lot of thought, because there's one thing stitching a sampler yourself, but there's another thing translating that sampler into a graph for somebody else to stitch it that hasn't seen it. So, you know, you devise ways, you devise your style of graphing something. And when it comes to freehand, stitchers that are used to counted work, they get very nervous about going into what I call uncharted territory, where maybe they have to draw on their fabric. So you have to find, like, you know, I will just draw on my fabric because I know I can embroider over it. But it's a big thing for a lot of people to actually take a pen and mark your linen. So, you know, with Hands Across the Sea samplers, we always try to, you know, not have where you have to trace. We try and count things out so that, you know, we're taking care of our stitches, because we want people to stitch our charts. You know, we don't want people to buy our charts and then get stuck and then not proceed. You know, people know that they can contact me and I will help them in any way I can to stitch our charts and to stitch any sampler, really. It's not just about our samplers. I'll always try and help somebody if, you know, if they need some help.
Right. Does that? But when you reproduce now, Do you have lots of instances where, oh, I've seen that stitch before, I've charted that, or that motif has shown up a bunch of times, so I know exactly how that goes? That must happen quite a bit.
Oh, absolutely. But it wouldn't be stitch by stitch. You know, little girls, you know, you could have two girls in the same classroom and they might stitch the same motif slightly differently. You've always got to count every single stitch. Right. You know, never presume. You should never, ever presume. And you should always count. Because you know, inevitably, these little girls made many, many mistakes. And if you're reproducing authentically, you should reproduce with the mistakes there. And then it's up to the person who stitches the sampler whether they want to sort of not stitch the mistake, correct it, or not.
Yeah, those of us doing Sarah, we full know that border. Boy, count every single one of those because
that's right. Yes,
that young lady.
Yeah. We've just got another sampler that's nearly finished, and the border, the little girl, her mind was anywhere bar her sampler. She could not count. So, but what I always do when I start to reproduce a sampler, if it's got a border with flowers, I would not start charting the border and put the flowers in. I will chart the vine out first and make sure it joins up before I start to chart the flowers, because too many times you know, I've had to go back and correct, because even when you're counting, you know, you can miscount. And what I like to do before I start to chart a sample, I do like to study it for quite some time, make notes, which is what you should do before you stitch a sampler as well, is study the graph, make notes, you know, check, you know, count out the vine, you know, the rise, the fall of the vine, and make sure that it's the same. And if it's not, make a note.
Right. Well, that's, you know, that's something I've learned with Sarah is, and I'm hesitant to say her last name now for, so now that it's just going to be Sarah.
Brazier.
Brazier.
Brazier. She brazed like a donkey. Okay. A donkey braze. Brazier.
Okay. But it is just that. Boy, I sit there, especially on that border, I will count out every bit of it before I even put a stitch in, you know, for the next section I'm going to work on, and make notes on my working copy. Watch this. Don't, you know, this is not 14, it's 13.
Do you know, that the stitch along for Sarah Brazier, it's just been amazing. It's wonderful to see the number of finishes that are coming through.
Yes.
And the number of participants and how active the group has been. You know, the activity on the group has not tailed off at all. You know, people are actively stitching her. And I get so many emails from people who aren't on Facebook that are stitching her, that are keeping me up to speed with their progress. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and those of us who are nearing the end, you know, it's getting pretty exciting.
Are you nearing the end?
Oh, yeah. No, I'll be done. I'm thinking 20th, 22nd of August. Yeah, somewhere in there. Easy. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. Which year?
Oh, that was that cheap, Vonna. That was cheap, Nicola. Come on. Come on.
Oh, right. Do you know what? I normally stitch across. If I start
that
a
was
project,
smooth but I, cheap. I,
yeah. If I start a project, I normally finish it, and I'm in the middle of the most gorgeous sampler, which I absolutely adore, and it keeps on going on the back burner. But this is what happens, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. No, that's. I have to say. I mean, I was setting Sarah aside often and anymore. Nope. I'm pounding away. Yep.
Yeah, because he's afraid. He's afraid, Nicola, that I'm going to catch him.
No.
Yes, you are. No. You are too. Mm-mm.
No. Yeah. No. I'll be finished. I'll be in the drawing for the original sampler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you will.
I'll be eligible.
Yeah.
Eligible.
Well, it's not Gary, it's not the original Sarah Brazier. The drawing is for Mary Clayton.
Mary Clayton. See there. Yeah. You know, how many times have I done a show and not looked that up? Mary Clayton is the one, yes.
Yeah, Mary Clayton. And she's a darling of the sampler. She's such a sweetie pie.
Yes. Well, I'll have the chart, Vanna, and be in the drawing, and it's going to be exciting. You know, if you could get done, Vanna, you'd be in on it too, but you know.
Yeah, I'm realistic and not a liar.
Oh, is that what you are? Okay.
Mind you, Gary, I will say something. Like, you know, having seen your stitching, you are an excellent needleworker. Your work is so neat and precise, and you are a gifted needleworker. So don't, you know, you might be taking your time with Sarah, but what you've done on Sarah is very, very beautiful.
Well, yes, thank
he
you
is.
For that.
He is a very precise needleworker.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've seen his work, and it is just absolutely beautiful.
It is,
beautiful.
Isn't it? Yeah. And he was an excellent student as well. I was very impressed with Gary as a student.
Those, you know, that I learned a lot. That was a class. I learned a lot in that, and I did not. I frankly did not expect to learn that much. I don't know why, but well, because I should have expected to learn a lot, because that sampler is extremely challenging. But I was pretty comfortable with most of the stitches, but I really, I picked up an awful lot out of that class. And the way, you know, that's something I wanted to be sure we talked about today, is the way that you go about it with the videos that show the examples, I think is really effective. And then supporting that by going around the room and showing people and helping people get over the hump, that, you know, for anybody who's, you know, I'm just going to do a sales job here. For anybody who's got a chance to do Nicholas, one of her workshops, they really are very, very well done and very effective. And I came out of there, I learned a lot, and not necessarily just how to do the stitches, but just about stitching in general. I just picked up an awful lot. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I come a long way to the States to teach. And I realize that people come a long way to hear me teach, and I want them to go home feeling that they've achieved, and I want to go home feeling that I've achieved as well. And, you know, with the videos, it's very, if you go to a class and you're shown something, you might not pick that sampler up at home for a couple of months, and it's so easy to have forgotten what you were shown. So I think, one, with the videos, you get to see exactly how they're being stitched in the class. And then two, you can play those videos time and time again in the class, and you can play them time and time again at home. And so when people are at home stitching the thigh, I'm with them in those videos. And if they have any queries about the videos, they know they can message or email me, and I'll Skype call them or Facebook call them, you know, and try and get them through it. And I also think, because I normally teach with a doodle cloth, and I take elements from the side, like everything we did on our doodle cloth for the thigh was taken from the sampler.
Right.
And if you worked your way through the little design for the doodle cloth, you went away with all the skills you needed for the big sampler. But because you were doing this on a doodle cloth, people were, they felt relaxed to play on the doodle cloth. If they were stitching on the actual sampler, everybody would have been tense and worried they were getting it right. And as you know, I was saying to people with their doodle cloth, if you make a mistake, do not unpick it, leave it in. Because when you pick up that doodle cloth in 3 months' time, when you're going to stitch the thigh, it's going to be an aide memoir. And if you look and you see a mistake, you know you're not going to repeat that mistake. A mistake is a good thing to make when you're learning.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, oh, yeah. And
you learn from your mistakes.
Yeah. I think that's probably the biggest thing I took out of the class was using the doodle cloth, because I have used the doodle cloth from time to time, but not really, you know. And and to use that as a functioning learning tool. I really came to appreciate the value of that. And I think Vanna and I both, when we do the Queen sampler, we'll find that the doodle cloth is worn out by the time we're done. Yeah.
But also with your doodle cloth, do a doodle cloth that's small enough to stick into a journal. into your stitch journal.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it should be a permanent record that, you know, you might stitch detached buttonhole in the thigh, but it could be 3 or 4 years, maybe 20 years before you stitch another sampler with detached buttonhole. But if you've got your doodle cloth in your stitch journal, you go back and it refreshes your memory.
Yeah, that's the one that's going to be the bane of my existence right there, man. I tried that because you showed me, because I couldn't get the tension right. And you showed me, and then I even came home and practiced a little bit. And yeah.
But, you know, if you remember in the class, Gary, I put up on the large screen my original doodle cloth when I learned to stitch detached buttonhole stitch for the very first time. I have kept that doodle cloth because it's important to me. And you could see, looking at that doodle cloth when I started, my tension wasn't right. And you could see in those petals that I was stitching, as I was rotating round, my tension was getting better and better. You know, you can't pick up a needle and expect to create a stitch perfectly without practicing. You just can't. It'd be impossible.
Yeah. Okay. I'm telling myself that. Okay.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, when I teach, I hope, in a very motivational way, and about self-motivation and having belief in yourself. I think that's so important.
Yep.
Because, you know, if you know how and you're prepared, if you're shown how and you're prepared to put the practice in, you can do anything you set your mind to.
Yep.
That is so right. You're right. And that's what I found out with doing my Jesus Project. Even though it was just on Aiden, it was just cross stitch, I had defeated myself, you know, 3 other times before I finally thought, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I did do it. And that's why that's the way I'm going to approach this queen sampler that we're getting ready to do, you know. And I had myself defeated on Sarah before Gary, you know, like I had the pattern, I had the threads, I had the linen, I had everything. And I looked at it and then I would toss it aside because I thought, I can't do that. That's too big. You know, and I was defeating myself, and it is very doable, you know?
Yeah.
And
I was going to say, at one of the workshops, it wasn't the one that Gary was at. I think it was the second workshop. There was a mother and a daughter, and the daughter had treated her mother to the workshop. And it was really the mother that was the needle worker, but the daughter came along as well. And because she didn't have any, I'm going to use the word phobias, but that's not the right word. What word do you use when you've got something in your mind and it's stopping you doing something? You're preventing yourself because you think you're going to do it wrong or it's something's hard. She had no preconceived conceptions. No, is that the right?
Yes. Yes,
and,
that is.
And because she hadn't psyched herself up saying, oh, I can't do that, and because she followed the stitch diagrams and because she watched the videos and followed the videos, she actually really achieved a huge amount. And her doodle cloth was really impressive. And, you know, and she'd never stitched detached buttonhole before, but her detached buttonhole was absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. She had, you know, she hadn't psyched herself out before she started.
Right.
Kids have have no fear. They just have no fear.
When I say daughter, she was a mature, you know, an adult.
Yeah.
So I think that quite often we do psych ourselves out about things, whereas if we have a more positive attitude and self-belief, like, though I've never changed a wheel, a tire on a car in my life, but I'm sure that if I looked at a YouTube video, that I could do it.
And that's what I really admire about you, because you've put out many times, I've seen, like, when you were blogging, solely blogging, or when you did your videos, how you would just say, you know, you brought out that I stitched, you know, as they send on Aida, and here it is, and, you know, don't let that stop you. And I just think that that's beautiful, because there's so many rules that we have to follow in life, but we don't have to follow rules in our own stitching. And we all need to embrace that, you know?
That's right, yeah. And, you know, there's nothing cast in stone with needlework, and your needlework should be done the way that you want to do it. You know, I always say this in the workshops, there's 8 different ways you can make a cross stitch. There isn't a right and a wrong way. It's the way that works for you. And with your needlework, you set the standard yourself that you want to, you know, execute your needlework. And everybody's needlework is beautiful. If you put your heart and soul into a project, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It really, really is. Needlework is very precious. And I do think that needlework is in our genetic memory.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think that.
Okay, got to wrap up. What are we going to have a Christmas sampler? And have you selected the Queen of the May for next year?
There's something interested in the pipeline. Whether it comes in, if it's ready in time, I don't know. But there's one particularly lovely sampler. And this one, if it's ready, it won't be a limited edition because it's not a huge sampler. It's a sampler that's not a huge publishing nightmare. But we shall see. It's a little bit too early yet. But I would say everybody watch out for the sampler that's coming out at the end of August. It was reproduced by Sandra and stitched by Sandra. And it is delightful. Absolutely delightful.
Yeah, we should take a couple minutes and talk about the people that work with you, because Hands Across the Sea Samplers, that name comes from the fact that it's not just you in England. There's people all over the place.
Gary, but you're part of Hands Across the Sea Samplers. You stitch our samplers. You're one of those hands.
Oh, you have my sympathy.
No, Gary, Hands Across the Sea Samplers represents all of us.
Okay.
You know, needlework is the threads that pull us all together. We would never.
You don't really want me in the group. You don't really want me in the group.
Everybody's in the group. And everybody has some sort of contribution to make towards the group. And everybody who stitches a sampler and posts a photograph of the sampler, you know, that's adding to Hands Across the Sea Samplers.
Okay.
It really is. But let's have a think. We have a male stitcher at the moment. We have
you
an
do?
Honorary man who's joined. Yes, isn't it, Gary?
Yeah, she quickly pointed that out, didn't she, Vonna? Did you see that?
I might grab you one day.
Yeah, she was very quick on that. Yeah, and by the way, it's not him.
Let me just think. We've got several stitchers in America. We have a stitcher in, is it Finland or Norway? Sweden. I get confused between those three countries. We've got Sandra and two other ladies stitching in Australia. We've got people in the UK stitching. And it's really lovely. It's wonderful to share something. And, you know, if you have something that gives you pleasure, when you share that pleasure becomes enhanced. And it brings us all together. It really mm-hmm. does.
Yeah. How many of those people who stitch models for you are also reproducing?
Only Sandra.
Just Sandra. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just Sandra.
Yeah.
So, but that's not to say that one day they might have the confidence to actually reproduce a sampler for themselves, which would be lovely. You know, we need as many people reproducing samplers as we can, because everybody who's, you know, who does reproduce a sampler, you're putting back into needlework.
Right. Well, and you've made it possible outside of Hands Across the Sea Samplers for other people to reproduce. Krista Gramer comes to mind.
It was a great honor to give Krista access to the two Lucy Calcutts.
Yeah, I have both of those charts. Do you have both of those charts yet, Vonna?
No, I do not.
You should get them.
Both of those charts. Well, I want to. They're on my Pinterest list of what to buy next.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm also going to have to, anybody out there in Bloomington, Indiana that's listening that needs to give me a job, because with Nicola's samplers coming out at the end of August, and I just want you to know, while we've been talking, guess who bought Mary Lee? Yes. She's coming my way.
Oh, you won't be sorry. What I try to do, Verna, because we can't.
Wait a minute. We have to pause. I rolled my eyes. Yeah. I rolled my eyes and they're stuck. Just a second. Okay, I'm back. Okay.
Do you know what, Verna? You don't have to stitch a sampler to get a thrill or some pleasure out of it.
Don't help her, Gary, Nicola.
Seriously, you can sit down with a graph and you can read the graph and you can get something out of reading a booklet or reading a graph. You don't actually have to stitch them all.
I want to be in the room when she lays that line on Keith. You know, Keith.
No. Well, let me tell you. Okay, so I had Keith watch the video that Nicola showed Mary Lee in. And I said, and I stopped it when she brought it out. When she went behind her desk and got her and pulled her out. And I go, I stopped the frame. And I go, look at that sampler. And he goes, uh-huh. And I said, isn't that beautiful? And he goes, yeah, it's nice. And I said, well, see, now they have it for sale here at Sassy Jack's. And he goes, how much is it? And I go, well, it'd be about $180. And he goes, huh, like that. And I said, oh, is that too much? And he goes, if you want it, get it, honey.
Oh.
Perfect husband.
He is a perfect husband. So, honey got it. Honey got it just about 10 minutes ago.
It's an investment against old age when you can't afford these things.
That's right, exactly.
Oh, dear me. Okay, you guys are getting dangerous here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, we gotta end. Nicola, thanks so much. Always fun.
It's been great fun. Fun.
All right. Thanks to everybody for listening. And remember, Fiber Talk Made Me Buy It gets you off the hook, except at the Fiber household. So
that's right.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening.